The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan Lewis brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on St. Patrick's Weekend. I know the Chicago River's dyed green, and green beer is served in Ireland and many other places, but I can't say that Rome celebrates by coloring the cobblestones emerald green. Maybe some year. I'll look at the news in a minute, but first want to tell you to stay right here for part two of my conversation with Chris Altieri, a former colleague at Vatican Radio. For years, you, my listeners, probably read Chris's stories on the web pages of English Vatican Radio and heard his voice as he did wonderful commentaries for papal masses and other events. This weekend in part two, we continue our look at the reform of Vatican communications. What's happened so far, the low morale in the Vatican, what reform means for Vatican personnel in the communications area, and what it means for people around the world who listen to a greatly changed Vatican Radio. Except we're not supposed to say that name anymore. The real explosive stunner to this story will come next weekend. And now the news highlights. Sunday, Pope Francis reminded the pilgrims in St. Peter's Square for the Angelus that the fourth Sunday of Lent is called Laetare Sunday, from the first words of the antiphon of the Eucharistic liturgy that mean to rejoice. He said, "We're invited to rejoice in God's great love for humanity. Christians," Francis explained, "are strong in the knowledge that God so loved the world that he sent his only Son to give us eternal life. Christians are strong because even when the situation appears desperate, they know that God will intervene, offering man salvation and joy. God does not stand aside," said the Pope, "but enters the history of humanity to animate it with his grace and to save it." Francis invited believers to reject the temptation of thinking they can do without God in absolute freedom from him and his word. Pope Francis said Christianity doesn't offer easy consolations. It's not a shortcut. It requires faith and a strong moral standing, which reject evil, selfishness, and corruption. It also gives us the true and great hope in God the Father, who is rich in mercy and who has given us his Son, thus revealing to us his immense love. Now, Sunday afternoon, thousands of people gathered together with the community of Sant'Egidio in the Roman neighborhood of Trastevere, embracing with joy and excitement Pope Francis's visit to the community for its 50th anniversary. Among those in the square, in front of the famed Basilica of Santa Maria di Trastevere, as well as inside the church, were refugees, children, disabled persons, the elderly, and Sant'Egidio founder Andrea Riccardi and President Marco Impagliazzo. In the large square of Santa Maria in Trastevere, under a ceaseless rain, Pope Francis thanked each and every one. "Here lays generosity with an open heart, a heart open for everyone, everyone, everyone. This makes life going forth." Inside the basilica, Pope Francis listened to the testimonies of all the generations making up Sant'Egidio. Giovanna for the elderly, Jafar, a Syrian boy, present in Italy thanks to Sant'Egidio's humanitarian corridors. Laura for the Youth for Peace, and Mauro Garofalo for the efforts of building peace, and then finally, of course, the greetings of Andrea Riccardi. In his speech, Pope Francis offered the community a perspective for the future, a mission to patiently weave together again the human fabric of the peripheries that violence and impoverishment have torn apart, a mission to communicate the gospel through personal friendship, to show how life truly becomes human when it is lived beside the poor, a mission to create a society that considers no one a foreigner. Audacity is not the courage of a day, it's the patience of a daily mission in the city and in the world. "Carry on this path," said the Pope. "The poor are your treasure." Sant'Egidio, the name means Giles in English, is revered in Rome and Italy and is present in 70 countries throughout the world. Monday, Pope Francis met a group of 300 French politicians along with their bishops from the Marseille Episcopal Province. He encouraged the politicians in their commitment to the common good by creating a more just, human, and fraternal society, keeping in mind especially the needs of migrants and refugees. Francis urged them to build bridges between people who find themselves in different social, economic, cultural, and religious conditions, as well as between generations. He expressed the Church's appreciation for a political commitment that is inspired by the desire to create favorable conditions for people to live together, respecting their differences, and being attentive to those in precarious situations, especially the most fragile. Never resign yourself, said Francis, to social inequality, which is at the root of the ills of society. Tuesday marked the fifth anniversary of Pope Francis's pontificate. It was a holiday in the Vatican, but Francis celebrated by welcoming at the Santa Marta residence a group of refugees from the Horn of Africa and from Syria who arrived through Sant'Egidio's humanitarian corridors. There were also some ill people hosted by the community, as well as Sant'Egidio president Marco Impagliazzo. Pope Francis listened carefully to the different, sorrowful experiences refugees underwent before arriving safely in Italy. Francis asked extensively about the operation mode of humanitarian corridors. He recalled his own personal intervention in aid of refugees on the Greek island of Lesbos and restated the urgency to develop this kind of corridor that has welcomed and integrated more than 1,000 people in Italy and Europe. Wednesday was the general audience, but before going to St. Peter's Square for the catechesis, Pope Francis met a Taoist delegation from Taiwan. The president of the Bawangong Temple presented Pope Francis with a declaration signed by him and by the secretary of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. He said this demonstrates the determination of the Taipei Bawan Temple to join hands with the Holy See in order to achieve the 7 goals listed in it, especially number 7, that seeks to promote and safeguard universal values, namely justice, peace, solidarity, friendship, freedom, and religious harmony. Afterwards, in St. Peter's Square, Pope Francis continued his catechesis on the various parts of the Mass, focusing this week on the Our Father and the breaking of the bread, saying these liturgical rites help us dispose our souls to participate in the Eucharistic banquet. In our catechesis on the Mass, he said, we now turn to the communion rites that begin with a common recitation of the Lord's Prayer. The prayer we offer to the Father as his adoptive children in Christ disposes us to receive the Lord's body and blood in Holy Communion. Called the Prayer of 7 Petitions, the Pope said, we pray to our Father, asking for our daily bread, for the forgiveness of our sins, and for deliverance from evil. These petitions are then expanded in the following prayers that invoke God's peace and unity upon the Church and our world. In the exchange of the sign of peace, we demonstrate our commitment to be reconciled with one another so as to worthily approach the altar to receive the Lord's gift of himself. Also Wednesday, previews went online of a new film entitled Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. It opens in theaters in the U.S. on March 18. It was written and directed by 3-time Academy Award nominee Wim Wenders and aims to be a personal journey with Pope Francis rather than a biographical documentary about him. Francis's ideas and message are central to the film that presents his work of reform and his answers to today's global questions regarding death, social justice, immigration, ecology, wealth inequality, materialism, and the role of the family. Pope Francis responds to the questions of farmers and workers, refugees, children and the elderly, prison inmates, and those who live in favelas and migrant camps. All of these voices and faces are a cross-section of humanity that join in a conversation with Pope Francis. Previews available at vaticannews.va. Thursday was dedicated to private audiences, including with the bishops of the Episcopal Conference of Pakistan in Rome on their ad limina visit. Friday was also dedicated to individual audiences, but at morning's end, Pope Francis received a group of students and teachers from Rome's pontifical universities. Saturday, March 17th, the Holy Father will visit Pietrelcina and San Giovanni Rotondo, where St. Padre Pio lived, worked, died, and received the stigmata. Now, stay here for a brief Q&A, and then my conversation about the communications reform in the Vatican with Chris Altieri. Welcome to the Q&A. I saw a Q&A recently in the Boston Pilot that was answered by Father Kenneth Doyle, and I think it's important enough I want to use it in my weekly Q&A, because many of you might have the same doubt. The person wrote, In a recent answer regarding cremation, you explained the Church's position that the cremated remains should be kept together and buried, not scattered or divided up among family members, for example, in lockets. Years ago, a priest showed us a relic that was a small bone chip of a saint. How can we have such relics, albeit of a saint, when the Church precludes the separation of cremains? Isn't that inconsistent? Father Doyle replied, "Relics of the saints have been venerated in the Church for nearly 2,000 years, certainly since the martyrdom of Polycarp in the middle of the 2nd century, and commonly bones of a saint were divided up with a noble purpose, so that more people could be reminded of the heroic virtue that saint had displayed." He said the Church's oversight of relics, though, is much more active today than it was in earlier centuries. Now, for example, the Vatican no longer grants first-class relics to private individuals as it once did, but only to churches and oratories for public veneration. To answer your question directly, said Father, one might argue there's a difference between a saint and an ordinary individual, between the public veneration of relics for the edification of the faithful, and the private custody of cremains by family members. I would like to add this to what Father just said. I want to distinguish what kind of relics there are. First-class relics. These are items directly associated with the events of Christ's life, the manger, a cross, etc., or the physical remains of a saint, a bone, hair, skull, a limb, etc. Traditionally, a martyr's relics are often more prized than the relics of other saints. Parts of the saint that were significant to that saint's life are more prized relics. Second-class relics are those items that the saint owned or frequently used, for example, a crucifix, rosary, book, etc. Third-class relics are any object that is touched to a first- or second-class relic. Most third-class relics are small pieces of cloth, though in the first millennium, oil was popular. I hope that sets your minds to rest.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The fourth commandment, honor your father and your mother. This commandment enjoins on us young children not only obedience to their parents and even older children, great honor for them, but also gratitude for all of our elders, teachers, employers, and leaders. It also directs citizens to a proper love of our country. So it's a rich commandment. And it also puts great requirements on those who are in those positions to be worthy of the honor that is due them. This commandment is fundamentally given to us by God because without respect for our elders, there can be no teaching, and we cannot hand on the wisdom of previous generations. This commandment is rich and it is for us. The fourth commandment, honor your father and your mother.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
This is Michael Warsaw, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of EWTN.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo from Catholic Connection. Have a blessed Lent from all of us at the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Chris Altieri, a former colleague at the Vatican, and for years you, my listeners, probably read Chris's stories on the webpage of English Vatican Radio and heard his voice as he did wonderful commentaries for papal masses and other events. This weekend, we continue our look at the reform of Vatican communications. What has happened so far, the low morale in the Vatican, what reform means for Vatican personnel in the communications area, and what it means for people around the world who listen to a greatly changed Vatican Radio. Except, as I said last week, we're not supposed to use that name anymore. We start our conversation today with the end of last week's show. The first thing I expected, I guess I'm so naive, was that the people that would compose the secretariat would be, for example, two from Vatican Radio, two from the newspaper, two from the press office, two from Vatican TV, all the people who've had the experience. And I can see where you'd want to cut down. You don't need six people translating the Pope's Angelus on Sunday or a Wednesday audience.
Quite right.
But there we didn't have any of that kind of input.
It was extraordinary, and I do have to say that as the reformers came in to start their job, they could not have found, at least speaking for Vatican Radio, I understand that there has been some pushback in offices that are not the radio, I don't know well, and that's, you know, that's word around town is.
Yeah.
And take that with a grain of salt, take it for what it's worth. I can speak to the situation at the radio at the beginning of the reform. And I can tell the listeners that there was no workforce better disposed to a reform effort or more conscious of the need for significant reform than the people at Vatican Radio. Mm-hmm. I was there for a dozen years. I was there, you know, I'd been there a decade at the time the reform started in earnest. And at no time during that 10-year period did I ever come across anyone in any state of life of any age, cleric, layperson, man, woman, what have you, religious, who thought that things were hunky-dory. Everyone understood that we needed significant reform and that it was, in fact, past time for a reform.
Right.
So there was a significant capital of goodwill that, you know, for one reason or another, got burnt pretty quick, and I'm not sure what there is to show for it.
No, I think that's the problem right now. A lot of us are in a state of wonder, wondering what's going to happen, wonderment at what has happened. I think for our listeners, anybody listening in North America, you're going to have continued access to Catholic radio wherever you live in North America. I'm guessing South America, some areas of the world will have problems. Right now, I think the most obvious public change in the communication sector has probably been the new webpage. It's several months old, came in the third week, I think, in December. It's called VaticanNews.va, and people should note it says at the top, kind of as a warning, this is the beta version, which means it's kind of like on trial. And we know they have a long way to go there. They're very big on pictures, a lot less so on content compared to previous websites. They love the color red, and they love videos. So, but if you want the Vatican in a nutshell, it's a good website.
Well, it'll let you know, I suppose, yes, what's going on just today. And that's, you know, that's important. People do want to stay abreast of the news. And as long as it's just the bare bones, then that's great. One of the overarching visions of the reform was this sort of technological convergence, so that text, video, and audio-based media would converge in this new web portal. The problem with that is that writing copy for radio is not the same thing as writing a print article, and neither of those is the same thing as writing copy that's going to be, let's say, a voiceover on a video report.
Exactly.
They are very, very, just from a point of view of tradecraft, these are very different things.
Exactly.
People who have spent 20 years doing one of them are not going to be able to shift and go into another one. And I'm not...
It's like writing a long analytical article or writing a little teensy two-word line under a picture to describe it. It's hugely different.
And that's the other thing that would very often happen. You know, there'd be a motu proprio that would come out. The Pope would change some obscure part of canon law, you know, modifying a discipline. And very often, especially in the last years, we had absolutely no forewarning that something like this was in the pipeline, which was, you know, unusual and something that took some getting used to as the functionality in the back end of the house, as it were, started to change and to some extent to break down. But when we did get the news – And maybe it'd be a couple of hours before the bulletin came out, sure. You know. We could pick up the phone and call over to the Pontifical Council for the Interpretation of Legislative Texts, let's say, sure. You know, and say, what does this new law do? Right. Or if it's something that affected the Congregation of Bishops, the Secretary of Bishops would be able to give us 5 minutes and say, this is what this is about. And we knew how to ask the questions to get the answers sure. in English, sure. because very often people speak, they think they're speaking English, but they're actually speaking Vatican, sure. and that's an issue.
Yeah.
One with which I know you're familiar.
It's a whole other world. Yeah.
Yep. You know, so that sort of thing, and by the time the story was out, now that story, you know, we'd post it maybe concomitantly with the news at noon, maybe an hour or so later, but yeah. certainly in time to help journalists get the story sure. right and then sure. get the story out to the extent that it was, it would become part of the record.
Right.
And it would also be something that could inform anyone who happened to happen upon it, to be interested,
exactly.
etc. It wasn't the sort of story that would get 80 million hits, right?
Right.
But, and here's the thing, you know, when we hear from certain of the leaders of this reform in the Secretariat, that people want to see the Pope being the Pope. They want to see him poping. One of the responses that I have is, yes, absolutely. And sometimes that means a great picture of the Pope kneeling before the icon of Our Lady Salus Populi Domani.
Right.
Okay? But sometimes that means the Pope governing the universal church. In fact, at no time, arguably, is the Pope being Pope than when he is governing the universal church.
Governing, right.
And that's not glamorous. That's not the big story that is going to get all over the news, unless it is, you know, if it's some major
sure.
change, he announces the Third Vatican Council or whatever, that's going to make some headlines.
Exactly.
Or he resigns. We all remember yeah. back. And, you know, that's going to make the rounds, and people are going to want to know about that, and that's just, that's a big story. But these little things that we would go about and do well are lost. And they are, I think, frankly, they're the baby in the bathwater.
Exactly. And I think that the problem seems to be in some areas that now there's too little information. The thing is, if you have too much, somebody's done a wonderful job researching an article or writing a summary of a lengthy document. You and I sitting in Chicago, Illinois, maybe we don't have time to read the whole thing. Okay, but we'll come back to it. But if it's just a short version, there's nothing to go back to. If you want a more profound thing, you're going to have to read the whole copy. I don't know yet on the Vatican website where all those documents are. I've done some research. I'll look under search, and I can't find some of the documents I need. But folks, by the way, if you are a person who does love to study something in depth, you can go to Vatican.va, the original website. You're going to find anything that the Vatican has ever put out. So, Chris, our time is coming to an end, but what are your kind of hopes for this reform as it, we don't know if it's nearing an end, but as it's taking place?
I hope it's successful. I hope that the end result is a system that better serves the needs of the universal church, especially the churches that are on the margins, on the peripheries. God, it'd be awful to wish anything else, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Oh, sure.
You know, if you ask me how sanguine I am about their ability to get there, you know, for now I'm going to sit tight and watch and,
right.
and wait and see. You know, one hopes that it's a rousing success, I
yeah.
think.
I think a thing that probably worries me, but it's also part of a hope, is the fact that I know, but the public doesn't know, you and I know, that there's been a very big human cost in this reorganization, in this reformation of the communicate. We've referred to just a little bit of it, some people being transferred. I know of only a few that have been asked to leave. So my hope for them is obviously that they still have the love for the church, for their ministry, if you want to call it, that they had at Vatican Radio. I agree with you about the passion. So the human cost is part of any reorganization. I hope that there's an upside for all of the people that you and I know who've been involved in a transfer, maybe that they weren't too happy with.
Sure, there is. Look, let's be completely frank with each other and say that there's a morale issue, okay?
Yeah. Oh, huge.
There is. I don't know quite honestly that it is fixable. I don't know that the reformers are terribly interested in fixing it, because if more people like me get fed up and leave, and let's be honest, that's what happened. As long as the policy of of no new hires is in place,
right.
You know, there's the hiring freeze. Now they're going to come back and say, "What hiring freeze? We brought I can't remember, but several dozen people into complete and full integration into the Vatican workforce."
Right.
You know, people who had been on term contracts, and some people
sure.
who had been essentially
sure.
part-timers, outside people, and now they have the tenure finally. Well, good, and I'm very glad that they were able to do that. Okay,
right.
And I understand that there are complexities and legalities and all sorts of things that are involved in that. I'm sure that the folks, the reformers, the higher ups over at Number Five, do believe that they're the good guys, and
right.
that's great.
Number Five being the office on Via della Conciliazione. So yeah, I would be interested to know. The Holy Father said recently in a talk with some priests, he said that, by the way, he has no idea how to use the modern media, how to use a computer, how to get online. He does not have a cell phone or anything. So I find that kind of interesting. I know he's been brought up to date on a lot of things. I hope he has been brought up to date on the human cost. That is to say, the real movement of people, some to other areas, some simply out of the Vatican. So, Chris, you and I've had a lot of wonderful years together. You're still in Rome, so we're going to still see each other. And so tell me what you're doing now. Update us on that.
I am off the leash, as it were, and writing lots of things that I have been looking forward to being able to write. Folks have seen some of them. You know, my byline is out there, because to keep the lights on, I'm still working as a journalist.
You got a family.
I do. I have a family, and I do love that work. But I've got a couple of literary projects that I'm working on, and I've hung out a shingle as well. People can find me at VocarisMedia.com if they ever need help understanding, if you're a Catholic looking to understand questions, media questions, I'm there. And if you are someone who is from the secular media and you're looking to understand the church, I'm here to help.
Well, that is great. And you know what I do, Chris? On the Friday before the show airs, I always announce on my blog who my weekend guest is going to be. And then if they have a website or something, I always point that out. So I will do that for you. So I want to thank you for your time. And you have a little bit of a trip to come in and see me, but I'm delighted you're here. And God bless you and your new ministry.
God bless and all the best, Joan. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for today, but please come back and join me again next week on Vatican Insider.